Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Jue and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania!
Welcome to Mania Mania 2000. This is your host, Terry the Cat Catlett. Here, as always, with my tag team partner, Jue Fabulous Moolah Holt.
Yeah.
And today we review for you, of course, WrestleMania 2000, not 16, but 2000, because right. It's in the year 2000.
Yep.
And, Jue, it is the year 2000, and what has happened in the last 365 days in the WWF?
Okay, well, the world ended at Y2K, so this doesn't happen.
So it's a total reboot.
Yeah, this is brand new, starts all over.
Good.
Okay, so at the Royal Rumble, The Rock won the Royal Rumble match.
Good for him.
So he got the championship title. He got the championship match at WrestleMania.
Right.
But also,
I love how you say "but" because so much other crap happened.
Yeah. But he did not get a singles match.
What?
Yeah, I know. The Rock, The Big Show, Triple H, and Mick Foley all got the chance. They were in a fatal four-way.
Right.
At WrestleMania.
As soon as I saw that on the card, I remember how much we talked about how we hated it
so
much in the last pay-per-view. And now it's the main event for the title. It's not like the first match out of the gate
it's straight away.
To get rid of a bunch of jobbers. Biggest. It's now this one that that I was adamant that I did not like. Mm-hmm. I now have to watch it for a main event. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
And not only that, the McMahons are in the corner.
Yep.
One McMahon for each of them. Linda, Vince, Shane, and Stephanie, all of them are in one of their corners, which is just getting themselves over.
Yep, I love it.
Then one of the other big ones was the Hardcore Championship, which Crash Holly, leading up to this, he was the champion. And he put out he would defend his title anytime, any place, which became a 24/7 rule.
Right.
So at any time, there was he had to defend his title in hotel rooms. In the airport,
right.
in the back lot of anything.
That's pretty cool.
I do
kind of like that.
I like that. That
gives you a lot of opportunities to do a lot of weird stuff outside of the arena or even in the city. Like, let's say he was just like sightseeing in the city and someone just jumps him from behind and pins him.
Yeah, that'd be so great. You know, he's in there in New York. He's at the Statue of Liberty.
That's right.
Then D'Lo Brown attacks him.
He just jumps out of the torch.
Yeah.
Or does a swanton bomb from the torch, lands on him, 1, 2, 3.
That'd be a sick bump.
That would be. It would get my bump of the night.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Then there's also one of the other main feuds was Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys versus the Dudley Boys for the Tag Team Championship.
That is the one I'm looking forward to talking about. So let's get right to it. Let me set the stage for WrestleMania 2000. It is April 2nd, 2000. We're at the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. 19,776 people are in attendance and waiting to see some fantastic pro wrestling sports entertainment matches. Mm-hmm. And we open with the lovely Lillian Garcia singing the national anthem, and it reminds me of the WrestleMania 2, and I don't remember the lady's name. I should look it up. Rockin' Robin singing it, and Lillian did a little bit better.
Yeah,
she's obviously a beautiful lady that can sing very good. I just wanted to hate it, and I don't know why.
I wish there was more consistency with America the Beautiful versus the Star Spangled Banner.
Preference.
I kind of like America the Beautiful just because it's also different. You hear national anthem everywhere. Yep. I get it. It's our national anthem.
I'm with you. I like America the Beautiful a lot better. Anaheim loves Lillian. I do not. Let's move on. So we do a video promo of the history of WrestleMania, and then we do a video promo of what's been happening in the WWF for the last few months, and it seems like the McMahons have really kind of staked their claim as the big plot, the family feuding, and that's going to play out here in WrestleMania 2000.
We're the most important family.
That's right, and we'll prove it sometime during this pay-per-view, but first we got to get to match number one, which is between
The Godfather and D'Lo Brown with Ice-T versus The Big Boss Man and Bull Buchanan.
Did you say Ice-T?
Ice-T, the rapper, Ice-T.
I was
star sitting of Law & Order, SVU.
That's right. When he came out and started rapping, I kind of had a thought of, hey, this is a different WWF than we're having to deal with now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, first of all, we got Ice-T singing, you know, Pimpin' Ain't Easy.
Mm-hmm.
And at certain points, he says, grab your bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Godfather's in the house, bitch.
Yeah, he says it a lot.
Make some noise for the hoes. Yeah. Like, this is not your G-rated.
We're not getting that now.
it was so interesting to see Ice-T there. It was a good performance, and we had all the hoes out there with D-Lo and the Godfather. And so that was, he tells everybody to smoke a blunt.
Yeah, roll it up.
Roll it up. So, I thought, man, this is a really different product than we're used to
now.
We're
not getting that currently.
And then the Big Boss Man and Bull come down to the ring, and they don't have any hoes.
No.
So they're already behind because they're hoeless.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match, sir?
They didn't seem to have a lot of chemistry, in my opinion.
They didn't. Two really different styles.
Yeah.
D'Lo, I always like him so much. He's super athletic, and I just like the flair. He reminds me of Iceman King Parsons, I like him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys took a lot of bumps. Bull Buchanan's kind of wearing a shield type getup.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember that guy a lot. Mm-hmm. But he was huge.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember why he didn't get pushes or anything like that.
He was pretty agile too. I think like he jumped off the top rope, I believe, or something.
That one where they kind of was that the one where they whipped him into the corner and he just jumped on the they whipped him into the turnbuckle and he just leaped both feet on the top rope and then turned, you know, jumped backwards and splashed.
Yeah.
I thought, man, that's pretty agile.
Yeah, he's real agile.
That's Shawn Michaels worthy. Mm-hmm. But this was just a good opening match, I guess. We had the big flare at the beginning. The Big Boss Man and Bull Buchanan get the win, and then they kind of chase the hose.
Yeah.
and then I guess that's winner take hose.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
I don't. One thing that I want to point out is I don't like in this era. There was a lot of times where the entrances or the aftermath lasted longer than the actual match.
Yes.
And that bothers me. Like this one, Ice-T was out there. Yeah. All right. That's fine. He was out there for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, dude, two verses and two choruses. That's fine.
Right.
But he was out there for 4 minutes. And then, it was just too long to me, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens quite a bit. Like, I'll point it out in a couple other matches, too.
That is interesting. It's a little too much. The entrances are starting to become the primary entertainment as opposed to the actual action in the...
Right.
I have another note, something like that a little bit later on. Remind me when we get to the Jericho match, because I thought about the same thing. Because the point being that the wrestling is becoming almost the backseat to the entertainment.
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So we go, instead of interviews and things like that, they're starting to do these really, these segments of just acting, they cut right to the back and we're looking at Triple H and Stephanie talking about how fantastic they are, and it's, we're supposed to believe that the camera's just there watching the back.
Just nonchalantly. It's
we just happen to catch a quick moment with the Hunter Hearst Helmsleys or what have yous.
Yeah.
And then we go to a little segment with the refs in the back. They're going over the hardcore match rules for the hardcore free-for-all that's coming up. The belt can change hands at any number of times in the 15-minute time limit, and it does.
Yes.
As we will see as we get to match number two, which is between
Taz versus Viscera versus the Mean Street Posse of Pete Gass, Rodney and Joey Abs versus Hardcore Holly versus Kai and Tai of Taka Michinoku and Funaki versus the Headbangers of Mosh and Thrasher versus the Acolytes of Farouk and Bradshaw versus Crash Holly.
Wow, that was fantastic,
yeah,
Trey. Wonderful.
I did it.
This match was pretty much just a free-for-all.
Yep.
We had lots of pins. There were 11 title changes in 15 minutes.
Pretty good.
It was great seeing some of these wrestlers. Taz, I hadn't seen him in a while, so it was really fun to kind of watch him suplex some folks around there.
Yeah.
The Acolytes are now a thing, which I remember really liking in the APA.
Yep.
JBL, he hadn't gotten fully in shape yet. There's a big difference between...
Yeah.
his physique in 16 and 17.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me. But this was pretty interesting. There were a lot of baking sheets used.
Yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them.
I like that they found that weapon because hopefully it's not as devastating as a chair, mm-hmm. as a bump to take.
Right.
But you still get the loud bang, and it looks impressive as that thing kind of caves around a human skull.
Yeah.
So they use that a lot. What was your kind of feeling on this match?
It was pretty good action. I liked it. There was one point at the fairly close to the beginning of the match, one of the refs says, slow it down to everybody. So yeah. Because they were just going nuts.
Yeah, because that bell rang, and it was just a free-for-all.
Yeah, they just immediately went outside.
And, Taz got pinned in like 26 seconds. Yeah. And we've talked about this for several of the battle royals that we've watched. It's too much happening,
mm-hmm.
Too fast. Like it's so hard to take in everything.
Yeah, yeah. And then Bradshaw went. Bradshaw goes nuts with a cookie sheet, and he knocks like 8 people out with it.
Yeah,
which was pretty nuts.
Yeah, there were. This was just nonstop action. It spilled everywhere in the ring, out of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Toys used, just a lot of. Just a lot of carnage. We finally, it made its way all the way to the back.
Yep.
Where, of course, they left out more baking sheets,
mm-hmm.
and were hitting people in the head, throwing people into garage doors. There was another pin in the back where the title had changed place for the 9th time or something like that.
Yeah, a couple pins in the back.
There's so much to watch in this one. Do you prefer something like this where a lot of people can get involved, or just the one-on-one hardcore, or maybe... just lesser people, like, you know, 2-on-2 or mm-hmm. the 4-man.
Instead of 13 or whatever it was.
Just 13 people.
Yeah. I enjoyed this because it was a different idea behind it, because there was an unlimited number of pins or decisions could happen. And it was interesting, like, having Funaki, like, run to the back after after he won. He just ran to the back. So they used this in an interesting way. And I thought they did it.
Yeah.
It was better executed than a lot of other battle royals.
Yeah, like the.
And since it was, they were essentially going after one person each time.
Exactly, like say the Chicago Street Fight, yeah. Which was just kind of like just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the time limit. I liked the fact that the titles could, as many title changes could happen at once.
Yep.
I was thinking like towards the end, the person that had the title would be more evasive.
Yeah.
Like, I was just thinking, like, maybe they'd just run or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what Funaki did.
I know that's not very hardcore,
yeah.
But just, you know, if you've got the belt near a time limit,
yeah.
just do whatever you can to make the clock run out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Funaki did, but, yeah. I mean, he did it at, like, 6 minutes in, which right.
or whatever. I mean, a little closer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, the last 2 minutes were just, like, Taz and then Crash and Hardcore just going for... pins, they're just getting near fall after near fall, which is kind of interesting because then you got 10 guys just fighting on the outside of the ring, right. Not even bothering to...
Right, and normally you'd have your eye on the prize thinking, okay, we got to... Who's got the title right now? And we got to get the pin for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Some controversy at the end of this one, and I didn't understand what would happen. Hardcore Holly pinned Crash Holly.
Yeah.
It was a 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
The ref did not go down for 3.
Yes.
But the bell rang.
Right, and then Crash got the belt and then ran away.
Right.
But then they took the belt back.
I didn't understand because there was no 3 count, technically.
And then Fink did announce Hardcore as the winner.
I was wondering if it was a botch.
To me, I thought it was a botch because Tim White was the referee and everybody was chanting like 4-3-2-1. And then at 1, when he was supposed to hit the 3,
mm-hmm.
he held off because what I think was supposed to happen was... as so many time limit, any match that has a time limit, there's going to be a close, there's going to be a near fall right at the last second.
Right.
So I think that's what they were supposed to do. But he went down too fast or something, or they pinned too quickly. But there was a botch, and that shouldn't have happened, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was just 1 second. Like,
yeah.
It's not like he went down 30 seconds ahead of time.
Like, he should have waited until he heard the crowd chant 2, then go down for 1, 2,
yeah,
and then
just
the
delay that last one real quick.
Yeah, just to... But then, since he does like the, his hand just is just barely misses at the end,
right.
When there's still 1 second left, I'm like, so then I think everybody was like going with it at that time, and they're like, well, there was still time left. Your hand didn't touch the mat, but you still should have counted. So we're giving it to Holly.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, like Crash took the belt and started walking away with it. I don't know if So if that was the finish, I don't know. It looked really confusing, and plus there was no kind of explanation if it was some sort of like if that was the finish. Like you'd think they would explain, you know, or at least it would at least have like a rematch potential. Like you never won the title or you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think it was a botch.
So now the ring is a complete mess, and they have to clean that up. So we do a prolonged access video footage showing all the fans at the access at the WWF Access event, and that looks pretty cool. And hopefully we can go to I want to go to that this year.
Yeah.
And but so that takes a while. They show all the WWF superstars and the fans and all the meets and greets and little promos here and there. And then we finally get back to the live event and to watch match number three between
Al Snow and Steve Blackman versus TNA of Test and Prince Albert with Trish Stratus.
Now, they kind of show a video segment here showing a little heat between Steve Blackman and Al Snow because Al Snow has a surprise. Apparently, Steve Blackman has no patience for Al Snow whatsoever.
Yep.
And it turns out Steve Blackman is right. Because as they get to the ring, Al Snow takes the mic and cuts a little promo and introduces the third member of Team Head Cheese, actually a little man dressed as a giant wedge of cheese.
Yes, Chester McCheeserton.
That's right. He comes down to the ring, and we all, Steve Blackman looks really pissed off, as well he should, because this is ridiculous. And then TNA come out with Trish Stratus. Still going to go with Terry Reynolds on your...
Yep, I am.
Because Trish Stratus is phenomenal looking.
She is, but I'm sticking with it.
The most interesting thing about the first part of this match for me is that JR's mic went out at the beginning.
Yeah, yep.
And so the King had to kind of stall, and he had just no game for it at all.
Yeah, which is weird. Oh, yeah, well, I mean, King only works off of people.
Yes.
He does not. He's a reactor. He does not actually yet.
So as they were fixing JR's mic, it was just a lot of him yelling at Trish to come here.
Yeah.
And making fun of JR for his mic not working.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a little interesting. Like, we're at WrestleMania, and we're having those type of technical difficulties.
Yeah. And that's interesting that we're talking about that instead of the match.
Yes, and here's why, because I didn't think the match was very good. There was not a lot of chemistry between these two teams.
Like they both did a lot of like double team moves, and those were both solid, but there was no like selling of it, really.
No.
It was like they do a double powerbomb and then go for a pin, and then they'd get up, and then the other team would do a reverse move, and it's like there was just a lot of back and forth action, but it was not, they
it
weren't
just,
selling it.
Yeah,
so
it was
doesn't
moves,
matter.
Moves, no psychology, no... you're right, no selling, so there wasn't any kind of momentum being built as far as, you know, one team dominating over another. It was just a contrast in styles to me, and I just didn't think it worked out too well.
Yeah.
I was more interested in what the little cheese was, you know, he started to kind of move into Trish, Trish's area towards the end.
Yeah.
But this match ends with TNA getting the win, and then we have... this was terrible.
Yeah, it was not good.
Al Snow and Steve Blackman just kind of take it out on the cheese guy and
Chester
and just beat him senseless
after
which had no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah, it was just so people could laugh at them beating up a block of cheese.
I did not.
Nor did I.
Because it was a pretty bad bit.
Yeah.
But we then go to a little. We go backstage to Mae Young and. The cat in a dressing room, and the cat is obviously very naked, and we do a lot of bits about almost getting to see all the goods, a lot of bad jokes, a lot of peekaboo stuff. Did you enjoy that at all?
I knew what was happening.
Right.
I knew I could see the bit a mile away, and it's just like this, I don't get it. Also, like, just the idea of Mae Young kind of just bothers me. The way that they use her, I would say. The way that they use Mae Young
bothers
me.
She's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
And then we have Michael Cole interviewing the Dudley Boys, who cut a really good promo. I enjoyed that promo. And that takes us right to match number four, which is...
Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys of Matt and Jeff versus the Dudley Boys of D-Von and Bubba Ray.
This is for the WWF tag team titles, which are hung up above the ring. We've got ladders. We've got... tables, we've got chairs. This match is iconic. it set the tone for TLC matches from, I mean, it's the benchmark from this point going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, every person in this match put their career on the line at one point.
Yeah.
The thing I liked, I mean, obviously the daredevil aspect to it. They did a good job in making sure each element, first of all, it kind of grew in danger level.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made sure that each kind of little segment had its own spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like, you know, they started a thing where, okay, we're all these people are laying out while this is going on over here. So there wasn't one thing kind of drawing attention from another.
Right.
What did you kind of think of this match?
This is a fantastic match. Yeah. I loved watching it. I knew that it was coming, and I was just excited for it. Like, I was kind of upset that I had to sit through Al Snow, Steve Blackman, and TNA to get to this. But, I mean, it was great. I mean, there was some fantastic spots. There was Jeff Hardy going for a 450 splash with Bubba sitting on the ladder.
Yeah.
And then Bubba moved, so he just did a 450 splash to a ladder. I'm like, oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Bubba put the ladder around his neck, and he did the spinning around move.
Little helicopter thing.
Yeah, the helicopter one, yeah.
There were so many elements. You know, this is a spot fest. You could tell, like, these are six people that are setting up these kind of devastating moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At one point, I'm just like, I don't really care about psychology of this, because I'm watching, you know, six people that have really kind of thought this out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to kind of go on the journey that they're leading us on. And I didn't, because none of them are trying to. I mean, it's tough to make it look like you're trying to win in this match, because mm-hmm. there's so many opportunities that you just let go.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end, you know, the Dudleys are building like this little scaffold, you know, like everyone was knocked out. They had plenty of time to just grab a ladder and grab the belts, but they start building this little scaffold in the middle that the Edge and Christian end up standing on afterward, you know, to get the belts. Yeah. So I don't care about psychology. I was just sitting here watching these six people just come up with. It was almost like, what are they going to come up with next? What's the next move that's going to make me go, oh my god?
Yeah, yeah. Like the Dudley Boys, they hit a 3D at one point, and it was like I've never seen them botch it. It's always so smooth.
Yeah,
their timing of the 3D is great. There was the psychology was almost built into the spots, which was interesting. Because, you know, like, Edge would take a bump, and then he'd be out for a couple minutes, so mm-hmm. he could sell. And then Christian would take a bump, and then he would be out. And then D-Von would take a bump, and then he would be out. But then Edge and Christian have enough time to get back in. So it was almost like they built in the spots where each person could rest,
mm-hmm.
because they all took crazy bumps, you know? Like, they get pushed off a ladder and fall out to the outside, or they fall into a table, or they, you know, they land on their nuts or something. Like, it was... I don't know. It just is so intense, and I was enthralled watching it. And it's amazing to me that nobody gets seriously injured.
Yeah, the ref's like, only job in this match is to make sure people aren't dead after every move.
Exactly.
Like, which I think is great. Like, there's a lot of people at ringside mm-hmm. making sure that, you know, and you can see it after every bump somebody takes. There's somebody,
the ref
going up, going, you know, you okay? And you can tell it's like you're front, you know,
yeah. It's,
and so that part I really like that they, you know, it's hard to take care of them in this type of thing, but as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like we've got, you know, the Bubba DDT off the top ladder. We've got double suplexes off the, I mean, they're just huge bumps.
Yeah.
Swanton bombs mm-hmm. off a 20-foot ladder.
Yeah.
It's one big move after another, and it's a pleasure to watch these guys perform. I mean, it's a shame that someone actually has to win this match.
Yeah.
Because that's almost, and that's what I mean about the psychology. It's like, I don't care who.
Right.
And I don't really root for anyone.
Of course.
It's just, I just watch, you know, watching these six guys just try and kill each other.
These are just really good athletes, and you're watching them. Or incredible, incredibly talented and dangerously.
And imaginative. Like, just them coming up with all these different ways to punish each other is pretty great.
Yeah.
But we do have to have a winner, and it is Edge and Christian at the end of the day.
Yep.
The real winner is us, Shui. Mm,
yeah.
Because we get to watch this. Any other thoughts on this match, sir?
My only other thought is I'm glad I get to see this at WrestleMania 17 again.
Yeah, this was that's the great thing. It's like, hey, let's do this next year.
Mm-hmm.
How many did they do total?
They did three. They did one at WrestleMania 2000, then at SummerSlam of that year.
Okay.
And then again at...
So within like a year, they did three of these.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a lot.
And you have to keep stepping it up each time.
I know. That's the crazy thing. It's like, oh man. Okay, yeah, this was the first one.
Yeah.
We now have to do bigger and more.
Right.
So stay tuned for Mania 17 when we do the next installment of that one. Mm-hmm. But we're going to move on in this one. And then they go back to the back to interview Mick Foley and Linda McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
Linda's horse is Mick Foley.
Yep.
The McMahons have screwed him over royally, and he's back to do his last match and to get some vengeance on Vince for just screwing him over his entire career or whatever the angle was. Yeah. I don't remember.
The thing that bothers me is, like, it's his last match, but he's going for the WWF title. What's going to happen if you win?
Hey, I retire as a champion.
Yeah.
I think with all the people involved, we kind of knew he wasn't going to win. But
Of course.
Yeah. But that takes us right to match number five between
Terry with the Fabulous Moolah versus the Cat with Mae Young.
Jue's favorite, Terry Runnels,
yep.
And the Cat are going to fight in the ring for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know
it's
what it is.
Probably going to be the most technically sound match of the night.
It is. Val Venus comes down as the special referee. We had the hose earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it seemed like the real fight in this it was to see who could show the most.
Yeah.
And because Terry Runnels comes down, she's kind of in a sheer outfit, mm-hmm. You know, you could just kind of really see through.
Cat suit, I think they're called.
Is that what it is?
Maybe.
And then when the cat comes down, she's got like this mesh thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just basically just bra and panties.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it. And so these two kind of roll around with each other. There's some angle where they're trying to get Val Venus's attention or love or whatever. They play that out a little bit. Mae Young gets involved. Because the thing is the first person to throw the other person out of the ring is the winner. And so we have a couple of false ones of those because Mae is trying to, as JR says, keep her puppies holstered.
Yeah.
She doesn't and tries to show them to Venus.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, this whole thing is just kind of a mess. And it's basically just a thing, a mash. But, I mean, the crowd loved it. Like, as soon as they announced it, like, the crowd was on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a bunch of dudes that just wanted to see some skin. And,
and
they got what they wanted.
They got it, yeah.
We did get to see Mae Young at the end after it was over because there was a lot of interference and Terry Runnels ended up winning. But Mae Young and Moolah got to go at it a little bit.
Yep.
And Mae Young's crotch shot, crotch chops.
Yep.
And then the Bronco Buster that she threw on Moolah.
Oh, man.
It was pretty terrible, but, you know, watching an 80-year-old woman do a lot of crotch chops to Anaheim was kind of funny.
Yeah.
After this, we go back to the back, and we get the WCW middleweights. We get Eddie Guerrero and Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko, and they're back there talking about how they're going to be victorious in their first WrestleMania. And so they're just talking a lot of stuff, and Eddie Guerrero's going to give China his full heat.
Yep.
So I can't wait. Yep. And China's not happy about that.
No, she's not.
So she and Too Cool are ready for the big match, which is match number six between
the Radicals of Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Dean Malenko versus China and Too Cool, which is Grandmaster Sexay and Scotty Too Hottie.
I'm going to feel bad about this, but I really like this match.
Yeah.
Here's why.
Don't feel bad about it.
No,
I enjoyed
it. There's five really energetic people and great good wrestlers
and like, Perry Saturn.
No, I was gonna say and China. You don't like Perry Saturn?
No,
that's good. I like that because he wasn't a huge factor in this.
Right.
It was a lot of Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko.
Yes,
and then Scotty Too Hottie and Grandmaster Sexay.
Yeah,
I forgot how fun they were with the crowd and how much they got the crowd into it.
Yeah, they're just a bunch of idiots and it was great.
They had the humor game going big time,
mm-hmm.
and they interacted with the crowd fantastically. The crowd popped for the worm big time, and
huge pop for the worm.
And it was a double worm that was great.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. China had a couple of spots in here, but I thought they had the kind of the subplot with her and Eddie in here that I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
What did you think of this one?
Yeah, overall, I liked it. There was some pretty solid action in it. The man, that worm was over.
Yes.
Those guys, they had their comedy down pretty well.
Right.
Like, at one point, Grandmaster in China did a double suplex to Dean Malenko, and then they both danced together, right. Which is kind of neat. I mean, because China's always been the serious one, so to bring her out as, like, play with the dancing and the comedy stuff, it was kind of nice. And overall, like, yeah, there was some pretty solid action in it. Obviously, China goes for the low blow because that's what she does.
Yeah.
Also, at one point, her pants ripped.
Yes, so I did see that.
It's kind of like while she's doing her, like, her back handsprings into the corner. Right. At one point, one of her something happened.
Her side
pants.
Split. Yeah.
Yeah, the side of her pants split.
We talk about the worm being really over, and this was kind of my point that we were talking about up top is like, and it's kind of where we're at today is that. The audience is really just into people's kind of signature moves.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like we have to do these, you know, we've got the entrances that are iconic and then we've got the signature moves. Mm-hmm. And everything else that happens in between them is not interesting to the audience, right?
Yeah.
And so basically we're just setting up, you know, where we can put these signature moves and we're starting to lose the psychology of matches mm-hmm. because it becomes like – this signature move spot thing, right? Like there wasn't a lot of. I mean, they had the subplot of Eddie Guerrero and China in this one, but not a lot of psychology because we're just trying to get to big moves,
right? Yeah, there's this one guy. He was in TNA for a long time. His name's Petey Williams.
Okay,
he does a move called the Canadian Destroyer.
It is
so amazing that nobody gives a shit about the rest of his matches. Like, I don't know how he is as a wrestler, but the Canadian Destroyer is amazing. He sets it up like a power bomb,
right?
And then he does a front flip, and it turns into a pile driver.
Oh my god!
Yeah, like even just describing it, it's crazy. If you see a video of it, it's nuts.
I'm gonna look it up. Yeah,
but like he even talks about it on like a podcast or whatever. He's like, people don't even care about me; they just care about the Canadian Destroyer.
And that's what I mean, like we
and
don't.
That's,
yeah,
like, prime example.
That seems to be, and that's the way it is today. Like it's kind of started here where. Because I don't remember it coming up. Like, Ric Flair, he did all the same moves, but it was not like, all right, knee drop.
You know, like, right.
All right, let's whip me over the, you know. There wasn't, like, this drawing of attention to, like, we knew what we were watching.
Yes.
We saw the moves, but it wasn't like this, hey, everybody pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe the Hogan leg drop, if he just sat there and made, okay, is it leg drop time?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you knew it was coming, but it was different.
Yeah.
I don't know why,
Because it seemed, within the momentum, it seemed offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were actually using them to knock someone out to get a win.
Yes.
As opposed to, hey, I'm going to do all this jibber-jabber nonsense just to get a pop.
Yeah.
It takes the intent out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just showy.
Yeah. You know it's kind of like Rey Mysterio 619. Like, the amount of times that guys would fall onto the second rope is just ridiculous. Like, that doesn't happen in any other match except when he's fighting Rey Mysterio.
Right.
Like, it just... Okay, that's weird.
No, I just lost my balance.
Yeah.
Like
so
I
happened.
Never do.
Yeah.
But this, I liked this match. I thought it was pretty entertaining. We had Scotty Too Hotty and China winning this match, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then we kind of go to the back, and we get Shane O'Mac and The Big Show talking about how they're going to wipe the floor with the other three and blah, blah, blah. And then we go right to match number 7, which is between
Y2J, Chris Jericho versus Chris Benoit versus Kurt Angle.
And this is a 2-fall triple threat match. First fall is for the Intercontinental Championship, and the second fall is for the European Championship.
Yeah, both held by Kurt Angle.
Both held by Kurt Angle, and I really like this match a lot. Now, look at this lineup. Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho. These are three guys that can really work.
Yeah, they know
how
to go.
Yeah, and I was really excited for this matchup because, you know, we'd seen Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho go all the time in WCW, and now you've got this great wrestler, Kurt Angle, to throw that in the mix. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
It starts out with Jericho, who was way more over than I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, his music came on, and that crowd kind of went nuts. I never remember him being that over, so that was kind of a shock to me. But he comes out and cuts a promo, and then we get the other two combatants down in there. The first fall was Chris Benoit winning, so he's the new IC champion.
Yeah,
and then we had the second fall, and then Chris Jericho won that. So basically, Kurt Angle's lost two titles in 15 minutes.
And he wasn't even involved in either of the falls.
No, that's what was so weird. this match had some really nice moments to it. Good psycho. I mean, I liked how they didn't make it a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
They did a good job of having kind of one-on-one situations a lot.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match, sir?
It was really solid action. I don't have a lot of notes on it because I was just paying attention.
Yeah.
Because it was like, this is just a really good match. Like, everybody's really solid. Like, Benoit superplexed Jericho off the top rope. Angle goes for a moonsault, and Benoit moves. Like, the referee gets knocked out. Jericho taps to the crossface, but the referee was out, so it didn't matter.
Yep.
So if he were up, then Benoit could have been both champions, but he wasn't. And it was just overall just really, really solid moves, just solid action by three really competent workers, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, they structured this match really well. I thought the match was paced really well. Because all three of these guys could go, there weren't a lot of like armbar holds and mm-hmm. like stalling tactics. There's few things in this sport more beautiful than Chris Benoit's headbutt off the mm-hmm. top rope. It mm-hmm. just, he stalls in the air just the right amount of time. It just looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and this is what we talk about the signature move thing. When he starts to put the walls on,
mm-hmm.
place just go like people explode out of their chair for the walls of Jericho.
Yeah. When it's the walls of Jericho, it's way more interesting to look at than just a regular Boston Crab. Because the way that they have them torqued and just bent, it looks so much cooler.
But just the
putting them
in the mood, I was just shocked that the people just went nuts for, he's about to put them in a Boston Crab. Yeah. Relax. He's going to get out of it.
I will not relax, Terry. It is a Walls of Jericho, and it's great.
Mark.
Yeah.
First of all, you got the really good people working this match, and then just the stipulations on top of that. I thought this was really executed well, and I really enjoyed it. After this match, we go to the back, and Michael Cole is interviewing Vince. He's backing The Rock tonight,
mm-hmm.
and that's his man. And then we do a quick little vignette of Triple H and Steph, and they're just talking about how great they are some more.
Yep.
Everybody's great. Everybody's
just good stuff. Good guys. Good people.
Everyone's really confident going into this match. Yep. So
all going to win.
Everyone's going to win the free-for-all.
Everybody's going
to
be happy.
But before we get to that one, we got to go to match number 8, and that is between
DX of X-Pac and Road Dogg with Torrey versus Rikishi and Kane with Paul Bearer.
Rikishi is now Rikishi. Mm-hmm. He was the Sultan earlier?
Yeah, he was the Sultan when he fought Rocky Maivia.
And I also forgot how big Rikishi was over. He was a big deal. The crowd, like he had a lot of stuff that made the crowd go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and you know where the signature moves become the main attraction. He had his little ass thing. Not a little ass at all, but it was cool how they teased it with Torrey almost getting it. And,
yep.
What did you think of this match?
It was all right. This is another one that had more celebration at the end. That was the celebration at the end was longer than the actual match itself.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned before, that's just a little too much. Like Road Dogg, his shake right on roll. That guy was over.
Yeah.
Like, and he does two things, and it works every single time.
Right, and
that's all you need.
This is exactly what we're talking about. It was everyone got their own little offensive mm-hmm. little segment in.
Yep.
Did their little signature move.
Yeah.
You know, we got Brocco Buster from X-Pac. We got,
Stink Face, Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
That's right. We did everything, and then Kane and Rikishi end up winning the match. The chicken comes down. Dwayne's talking about. At the end of this match, Too Cool, it comes down to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
The chicken comes down to the ring.
Yeah.
And now we're going to do a little dance in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they have the choreographed dance that they did.
Yep, they did a dance.
And so now all four of those people are dancing. Kane's looking at the chicken because we've got the callback for Pete Rose from last year.
Yep.
And then after they finish dancing, Kane starts to choke the chicken. Mm-hmm. Please don't take that the wrong way. And he's got the chicken by the throat. And then Pete Rose comes from behind with the baseball bat.
Yep.
Tries to hit him in the back. Doesn't work.
Kane choke slams him.
Yep. Choke slams him. Doesn't do the tombstone or doesn't do the – what does the movie usually does on him?
Kane?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does the tombstone.
Oh, okay. Because they were talking about him getting that last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they prop Pete up in the turnbuckle, and Rikishi gives him the old stink face.
Yeah. It's funny to see Paul Bearer, he did a crotch chop. which is just old Percy Pringle.
That's good. Right. I never. He probably never thought that he'd be doing crotch chops at the age of 60.
Yeah.
But he was. But yeah, so that match ends with Pete Rose, non-Hall of Famer, taking the stink face from Rikishi. And I hope he cashed a nice check for that.
Yeah.
We go back to the back and they interview The Rock, who is being The Rock, and he's going to overcome all the obstacles to win the match, because tonight he won't be stopped. And so he's also confident going into this one.
No way.
Everyone's confident.
Yeah.
All that's left is to turn on the lights and get this party started. So let's go to the main event, match number 9, which is between
Mick Foley with Linda McMahon versus The Big Show with Shane McMahon versus The Rock with Vince McMahon versus Triple H with Stephanie McMahon Helmsley.
Every McMahon has a horse in this race, and they're cheering them on mightily. Now, here's what they did different than what we talked about not liking before. Each segment, and by I mean segment, like leading up to a particular pinfall, had a story to it. So each little segment, to me, had a point, which made it more watchable, right? You know, you've got the thing with Foley. It's his last match. But you've got the I like the little triple team segment that they had on The Big Show where they were showing, like, it took three guys to knock him out. So they each kind of – you know, the one guy started knocking him in the head, and then two guys started punching him, and then it was three, and then it was one guy tries to clothesline him, two, and then finally The Rock knocks him over. And so that was a nice build to it. I like how, you know, Shane tried to interfere with The Rock, and then Mick hit The Big Show with the chair. So we kind of have some psychology going here, which I thought was pretty cool. And then after The Big Show was eliminated, we had like Triple H trying to form an alliance, like just little storyline going in with the, you know, and then hey, this is a rock and sock connection. Nobody comes between these two, so you know, what did you think about how this was kind of paced out?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you said.
Good.
Yeah, that's it. I don't have anything to say.
Awesome.
No, when the when Big Show was eliminated, and then they. Rock and Sock worked together on Triple H. It was really good. Mm-hmm. And, like, Mick Foley throws The Rock the ring bell, which we haven't seen in a long time. It's like Macho Man. And then Triple H ducks, and then The Rock hits Mick Foley with it. Oh, no!
Yeah.
And then they pull out. Then Mick Foley pulled out a 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire. Like, oh, this isn't...
That was out of place to me. That was the only thing I was like, really?
He's the king of the death match, man.
I understand, but it just, like, the way it was used...
Yeah. It did seem a little strange.
It was barely used and then laid on the floor for a while. And then, because as things start to happen, Mick Foley is eliminated. He gets pedigreed on a chair.
Yep.
And a really good moment for him, because they kind of stalled the match a little bit, so that he could kind of get his last, you know, the crowd really gave him a really great Foley reception, you know.
Yeah.
And so he starts to walk back to the back, and then he comes back to grab the barbed wire board and then hit Triple H, but it doesn't lead to a knockout or a...
Yeah.
It was just, hey, let's just knock him in. I don't even think he was bleeding at the end of it.
I don't think so. There wasn't a lot of blood in this.
No.
But they fight in... Michael Clark Duncan was in the front row, and he was getting active. He was yelling at everybody. He yelled at Bubba Ray earlier on.
Yeah,
but it was fun.
That is a large man.
Yeah,
he could step right into the ring and do whatever he wants. He's a giant.
There's at one point, like towards the end of the match, like Vince and Shane start fighting at each other and everything. And Michael Clark Duncan, Shane like makes a move at like he's gonna hit Michael Clark Duncan, and then he goes, "Do it! I want you to." And he obviously doesn't.
The end of this match, Vince ends up turning on The Rock. Hits him with a chair and knocking him out, and then Triple H pins him to remain the WWF World Heavyweight Champion. It was a really good turn, and you know that because people were throwing trash in the ring. Like they were not happy that he turned on The Rock, which just goes to show how over The Rock was and how much people loved him at this point. They were not happy with Vince doing the Montreal screw job on The Rock at that time. But actually, you know, we had some pretty bad after the match stuff. I thought this after the match stuff was really good because it sets The Rock up as a badass. And also because basically The Rock just rock bottomed everyone in the McMahon family.
Yeah.
And Stephanie as well. Mm-hmm. And props to her for taking that bump because it was he got her up pretty high.
Yeah.
And dropped her down on some trashy goo.
Yeah.
And then gave her the people's elbow, so she took two. Good. Which
I appreciate that because then it's also the heel gets the victory, but the babyface goes over, mm-hmm. which is a you know you always kind of want your biggest event to be popular with the crowd. You know, it's to end it on a high note is always a good thing.
They started to do a really good job of that, just keeping everybody whole no matter what happens in the match.
Yes.
You know, so The Rock did have to lose to Triple H, but he comes out looking like a giant badass.
Mm-hmm.
And then once again, props to the McMahon family for, you know, walking the walk because, you know, they ask these, you know, you watch those TLC guys do all that stuff. And then when you get the owners coming out there having to take bumps as well, I think that goes a long way in the back.
Yeah.
You know,
I would agree.
Let's get to the awards. Zhuay, what is your pop of the night?
My pop of the night goes to The Rock.
I think you're correct, but I'm going to also give it to Jericho because that's the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah, I get that.
Because his music started and I went, whoa, they actually like him.
Yeah.
All right. Because I do not. My botch of the night is in that Fatal 4-Way, they had a segment where Foley was going up to the top rope. Mm-hmm. He laid The Rock on the Spanish announce table.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, of course, was going to the top rope and he was going to do the flying elbow. Mm-hmm. And, of course, break the tape, you know, supposed to. He didn't get enough air under it.
Yeah, he just
and
hit
he
edge.
Hit the end of the. Oh. He hit the edge. And then the table didn't break.
Right.
So I thought. You know, you want to talk about botch. It was supposed to be something that it wasn't.
Yes.
But Foley also took a big bump because of it. So that's my botch of the night. What's your botch of the night?
My botch of the night is the end of the Hardcore Battle Royal. The miss three count / end of time running out / Tim White and Fink not knowing what's happening.
That is fair.
It was just a bit of a mess.
Mr. Zhuay, what is your bump of the night?
My bump of the night goes to Jeff Hardy 450 onto an empty ladder.
That was mine as well.
Nice.
Because had Bubba stayed on there, it's less of a blow. A lot of people will say the Swanton off the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
Through the table and all that, which is fine, but he's landing on his kind of his backside when he does that.
This one's right on his chest.
This one was face first into a ladder.
Just sternum straight
and
on it.
That's the one where I just went, no, plus he knows that's coming.
Yeah.
And so he still has to do it anyway.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Incredible bump. What is your spot of the night, sir?
My spot of the night basically could have been the entire triple threat ladder match,
but
my spot is Jeff Hardy Swanton off the ladder onto Bubba Ray on the table.
The way they built that up, and I liked how they started it with kind of Bubba building all that stuff, setting the stage for that, instead of like Jeff doing it, because it was almost like he turned the tide. And
yes, exactly.
So it was kind of like the way they kind of worked the psychology into the elements like you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great one. My spot of the night, because I think China is pretty much useless, but her cartwheel backspring.
Yeah, yep.
The way they set up that segment, she did a cartwheel backspring into Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko on separate turnbuckles, and then they both kind of staggered forward to the center of the ring, and she did the double low blow. That looked pretty good.
Yep.
So I'm going to give that
the
spot of the night. What is your worst match, sir?
Worst match of the night goes to Cat versus Terry.
That was awful. I will give you another one, but it's TNA versus the Head Cheese. Two opposing styles did not work together, and then that finish after the bell just gave me the yucks.
Got it.
My best match, I'll go with the TLC match. Do you have a difference?
I do not.
Do not?
That's a how
one,
could you?
One for the
that's
ages.
Great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Now the big one, the MVP. Who's your MVP for WrestleMania 2000?
I have co-MVP, Triple H and The Rock.
Ooh.
Yeah. Go ahead. They lasted 20-something minutes by themselves at the end of the match, and they had me invested in it, and they were solid action. It was well done, well paced after, I think it was another 17 minutes after Foley had been eliminated. So they had already wrestled 19 minutes before they had wrestled like a handful of minutes with Big Show, and then a total of 19 with Foley, and then another 17 without them.
Yep.
So it was just those two people to put in a 36-minute match. That's impressive to me. To keep me interested the whole way as well.
Yeah, they had a lot of things going for that. I'm really glad they kind of scripted it out the way they did, because everybody did their job in that one, and I thought it came off looking really great. My MVP for WrestleMania 2000 is I have co-MVPs as well. Everyone in the TLC match.
Yep.
Every single person out there put their body on the line mm-hmm. for our entertainment. I thought it was fantastic. All the elements they set up, the creativity that they used,
mm-hmm.
and then just the commitment and the way that, you know, they took care of each other and they made mm-hmm. it to where we could come back and watch it again. Yeah. So I'm gonna give it to them.
I can support that.
Excellent. Well, that's all we have today for WrestleMania 2000. I hope you enjoyed it. Come back next week when we have Mania 17.
Yeah.
Here are some highlights. We've got the main event of Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock,
mm-hmm.
The Undertaker and Triple H, and we've got another TLC match.
Yeah.
It's going to be even better than the first one.
Can't wait.
Until then, I have been Terry the Cat Catlett here with Dre Fabulous Moolah Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.